Okay, thank you. As the title says, it's talking about rational hybrid Monte Carlo. So I'll just start off with a motivation behind this work, why we're doing this, which will include an overview of current algorithms used for 2+1 quark flavor simulations. I'll then introduce RHMC, rational hybrid Monte Carlo, and then discuss the specific difficulties and how will we resolve the difficulties with the fermion actions that people actually want to simulate for 2+1 flavors, and then I'll just sum up at the end with the conclusion. So as we're all familiar with the lattice QCD path integral, now what I'm interested in here is when I have a varying this parameter alpha here. When alpha equals 1, we have 4 flavors of Staggered, 2 flavors of Wilson for the M-Dagger-M kernel. Now, if I want to simulate a theory with an arbitrary number of quark flavors, I can introduce non-integer alpha, which will allow me to get 2 flavors of Staggered, 1 flavor of Staggered, 1 flavor of domain wall, Wilson type, in Wilson type formulations.
Of course, you know that. We've had lots of discussions about how irrational that is.
Yes, yes. I'm not discussing the merits or lack thereof of non-integer alpha with staggered formulations, or just how you would do it if you want to do it. Both the ASTAD and the domain wall programs on QCDOC want to do 2+1 flavor quark flavor simulations, so we want to do this. So we need to use special non-local algorithms for doing this, since the conventional hybrid Monte Carlo algorithm fails. So the most popular algorithm, certainly for the ASTAD case, is the R algorithm. The fermionic determinant is rewritten in exponential trace log form. The trace is approximated by a noisy estimator, Gaussian estimator, and this is exactly equivalent to pseudofermions which are used with HMC. Now, the way the R algorithm works is it uses a funny modified version of the leapfrog integrator, which means that it's not reversible and it's non-area preserving. The upshot of this is you can't include the acceptance test at the end of trajectory, which removes the finite step size errors induced from the inexact molecular dynamics. But the algorithm's cheap, it's very popular. But to really do it properly, you really need to simulate, perform simulations at multiple step sizes and perform an extrapolation to zero step size, but no one ever really does this. So you also could have the PHMC, polynomial hybrid Monte Carlo. So you rewrite the fermionic determinant as a polynomial approximation. The polynomial is an approximation of the spectral range of the operator you're wishing to over the kernel M. The approximation generally used is the minimax. The easy thing about PHMC is you can very easily do the heat bath. The roots of the polynomial approximation come in complex conjugate pairs, which means you can very easily decompose the polynomial approximation to two pieces like this, which allows you to do the heat bath easily. And you don't have to introduce any funny kind of leapfrog integrator. You don't have to modify the leapfrog integrator anyway, I should say. You just use a standard leapfrog integrator, which means you can, in principle, include an acceptance test at the end of the trajectory to remove the finite step size errors.
Can you explain briefly how you calculate the polynomial?
You could use, as well as there's a few methods you could use. I would use the Ramez algorithm, which I'll come to briefly in a few slides.
You can use heat bath without even doing hybrid Monte Carlo, right? Or no?
Hmm?
You can use heat bath without even doing
hybrid Monte Carlo. I don't quite follow what you're saying.
Well, it's a polynomial. Can you just do it?
But you have to update that.
Yeah. So you have updated.
Well, maybe it's the same thing. One Monte Carlo or another.
You have to have some sort of molecular dynamics.
You still need the universe.
Yes.
P of n is a non-local function.
Approximate.
You need do you think he passed because he's student Daniel, as well as to read like the language of PhD that way?
Right.
Okay, so we can include a...
I think the point is that P of M being a polynomial is...
Well, polynomial, it becomes
how high a power
yeah. It
is.
But it's something you calculate once for all.
Well, you would have to calculate
it's
every.
Yes,
it's a static. You calculate that once, unless, of course, the spectral range changes on your operator.
Right. I mean, you can make it into a multi-boson algorithm. If you want.
No, I think what he means is just that what you have is polynomial in discrete time. So since it has a finite line.
So there's no inverse. You take a derivative of that, you don't get an inverse.
Yeah, you need to invert this to get the heat bath.
Yeah.
But you're right. Do you use an approximation just like you use a polynomial approximation to 1/m?
Yeah.
But that leads to multi bosons if you want to do a heat bath. It doesn't seem to help.
I like it.
So problem from PHMC comes in because you have a finite size of error in your polynomial approximation, which is generally bigger than the residual you'd use for when you just use standard HMC. And you have to really compensate for this error. And you can do this by using some kind of noisy acceptance test or appropriate reweighting in the action when you're measuring the acceptance probability. When you do such noisy methods, they scale like the volume squared, which means you really have to reduce the step size a lot when you go to large volumes, which basically means the algorithms cost a lot in the regime we want to simulate. When you use a high degree polynomial, the memory cost is very large. When you have a non-analytic function, you have to store n over 2 vectors simultaneously, where n is the degree of the approximation. Now, if n is order 100, 200, 500, that's a large amount of memory you require. You're potentially sensitive to rounding errors. There's no equivalent to CG when you can do a restart if you're getting hit by rounding errors. And when you're calculating the derivative of the fermion operator, when you have Astad fermions, it's a very expensive operation because you've got to do this chain rule and this very disgusting looking operator. If you were to do this naively with PHMC, you would end up with a very, very expensive algorithm because you'd have to do this in every single part of every single root of the polynomial, because the force is non-analytic. You have to calculate the force of the approximation. You can't approximate the force. What I'm saying is, if you take the yes. How do I do that? And chalk. Thank you. You want to you have an action that looks something like if you want to calculate the square root operator for two flavors staggered, say. Now, to calculate the force, you need to calculate the derivative with respect to the gauge field.
Right.
Now, you can't do this analytically. You have to approximate this and then take the derivative of the approximation. If you could calculate this thing analytically and then approximate the resultant thing, then you wouldn't have this nasty cost in the force.
Well, there's a formula to work
out. You can't write this thing analytically.
It's m minus 1/2, dm at 2/2.
Because this because of the non-commutivity of.
No.
You can, in standard HMC, you would have something like this. And that's easy to do. You just end up with.
Yeah, now you can substitute m for the square root of m.
But I mean, how would you write this?
You have the square root problem, but you don't have the.
Yeah, you have the square root problem. Yeah, but yes. So okay, so this thing, yes, so this thing is equal to m to.
Right.
Yeah, you would have that.
Yeah,
But then you, then, okay, so my point is, this thing here is non-analytic. Yeah. Yes, sorry, yeah, that on the other side. But this thing here is something you can't write down.
Oh, for this you're right, you use the polynomial.
Yeah, exactly what's what I'm saying.
So you have the fact that you're using an approximation before we take the derivative is stinks or something like that.
Yes. If I could write this.
I think that's a checkpoint. Yeah. Just polynomial, two polynomials, you know, one part together, right?
But I saw that m to a half is not so. I mean, a polynomial approximation for m to a half would be much better behaved than one to m to the minus of half.
It's not that much different.
No?
No.
So the problem is that m has sometimes small eigenvalues, and m to a half doesn't go so nuts.
So it depends on the mass.
But n to a half will always.
Okay, you could.
No, of course.
But anyway, even if you could, if you did just write this as a polynomial and then did the derivative of this polynomial function here, you would still have to evaluate this thing applied to the vector.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's no, I mean,
yeah.
That's but you cool would, even if you upgrade.
Yes, yeah, of course, and this. You would still have this large cost because this thing would still, the polynomial would still be order of 100.
Yeah. Okay.
And so you would still have this very costly Astad force term. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is of course correct. But so the problem is we have the R algorithm, which is cheap but inexact, and we have PHMC, which is exact but very expensive. So we want an algorithm which does both, basically, has the cost of R and the exact behavior of PHMC. I'll put the lights off. Which one?
No, on the wall.
Oh, yes.
You might screw up the recording.
But you have to do it all over here.
So what you can do instead of using the polynomial approximations, use rational approximations in their place. As we all know, rational approximations are much more accurate than equivalent polynomial approximations for the same degree. And this plot here, I've just got for a given degree of approximation, comparing polynomial and rational. Now, this curve here assumes that the degree of the numerator and the denominator of the rational approximations are equal. But you can see that the difference in error is orders of magnitude difference.
That's for m to the minus a half.
This is m to the minus half over a given spectral range, which I'm using for a staggered operator. Yes, this is of course true for any spectral range. The optimal rational approximations are generated using the Ramez algorithm. Now, when you just use overlap, you can just use Zolotaryov approximation where you're only concerned with the sign. But we're generally interested in square roots, fourth roots, nth roots. So we have to the calculation of the coefficients are not so simple to come out. So we have to use this Ramez algorithm, which is just an iterative search process.
The Zolotaryov rates for doing it analytically don't extend?
No, they don't.
That's for fourth roots. They don't extend. Or they do?
They do not.
But the transform of any gives you the coefficient square root. It's only tailored curve in front of root. So, no, but those tricks cannot be used for. No, it's some very special thing. Yeah, yeah. I don't know about the it's just analytic functions of square root, false root, right? No, does it matter really? Not really.
Okay. It's much more expensive to calculate the approximations using the Ramez algorithm, but you just do it once, Julie, at the beginning of the simulation, and you know, you take 10 minutes to calculate these functions, but then you're running for obviously weeks after that, so it doesn't really matter.
Are you going to class what this algorithm is? Or
not really. I'd refer you to the literature.
You have to look that precision.
No, when I do the Ramez algorithm, I actually have to use.
I use usually
40 or 50 digit precision is required.
For the coefficients.
To calculate the coefficients, not in the simulation.
Once you have them.
That's fine. They're stable after that, yes.
Right. So then you use double precision.
Yeah.
Some hint as to what goes into it? I mean,
it's
so it's like a probability approximate?
Not quite, no. It's basically just a search algorithm which ensures that the result in rational approximation has equal height. All the errors are of equal height. And so you have, for a given rational approximation of some numerator degree n and some denominator degree d, there are n plus d plus 1 zeros in the function, which errors in the zeros in the error of a function. You have to make some assumptions about the form of the resultant rational approximation, and you're basically just doing minimization on that.
But does it depend on the matrix?
No. All it depends on is the spectral bound.
So you have to know something about the spectrum.
Yes, you have to know the bounds of the spectrum, okay. And once you know that, and you know what the resultant rational function has a certain number of zeros and a certain number of maxima of errors. All the errors are of equal maximum height, equal magnitude.
Okay, so given a numerator and denominator, and given a particular spectral range, this is a unique thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And it depends only on the spectral range.
Yes.
But when we used to do the square root ones, this program that needs to be downloaded breaks down after rank 13, 14, and so on. Do you have any?
Ramesh seems to have a wonderful property that lots of the popular implementations are buggy. So in particular, the implementation in Maple is wrong.
No, I've gone up to...
What's the rank that you think?
I've gone up to degree 40.
40?
Yeah, but it takes a long time.
The program.
No, you'd be using multiple sessions. I mean, you can't do it. So.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Yeah.
But it takes a long time to come out.
Oh, multiple sessions.
No, you need all your variables. When you're doing these calculations, you need sort of like 256-bit arithmetic.
Did you eventually use Maple or some package?
No. I've just got my own algorithm which does it.
No. He just said that Maple is
better. Yeah, well, there's only
some other package.
Oh.
I've compared my results against the Mathematica, which appears not to be buggy.
So let me ask a really naive question. So what you're actually thinking is you're taking this m to the whatever it is, and you're writing it as a polynomial and powers of m upstairs and downstairs.
Yes.
Okay. And then how are you going to handle the downstairs part?
We're coming to it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We're coming to it. I just wanted to motivate why we want to use rational approximations. Basically, they're so much more accurate than polynomial approximations.
What is the rationale for improvement?
Pardon?
The roots in the complex plane?
The roots are real.
Why is the rationale so much?
The rationale.
Yeah.
What's the rationale?
The problem of the assault.
Sorry?
What's the reason?
What's the reason for doing this?
No.
Why is it better?
I mean, if you use a Fabre approximant for a series, singularity.
But this is like a Fabre.
What?
This is a Fabre.
It's like a Fabre, yeah.
So, what are the rules?
In some cases, there are theorems that say that the rational approximation converges exponentially in the degree where the polynomial approximation only converges as an inverse power. But that's not always true. Sometimes the polynomial converges exponentially too. But as a general rule, the rationals are just converge much faster. It's something which is common.
It's just
understood in numerical analysis, but nobody ever understands could give you a fundamental reason why it has to be so.
Uh-huh.
But the special functions in your computer are implemented this way, with rational. Okay, that's just...
Okay. So we all know that when we have a rational approximation, I'm fairly sure we all know anyway, that we can write this in partial fractions and evaluate using a multi-mass solver, which makes the evaluation of a rational approximation just the same as the inverse of the lightest partial fraction, the evaluation of the inverse of the light. What I'm saying is the cost of the CG inversion, if the rational approximation is written in something like this, the computational cost is similar to inverting one of these systems.
You're using an m, not an m squared, not a positive definite.
I'm using, okay. So at the beginning I said...
M is a m squared.
Yeah.
Oh. So we've got. I'm using this. Okay.
Okay.
just to reduce, just to make.
Cal,
yes. Yeah.
I use the Cal font.
Okay, so we have our pseudo-fermionic action.
Does MRes automatically give you in this form, or do you have to?
Does what, sorry?
Does MRes.
Remez.
What is it?
Remez.
Remez.
Remez, yes. Another accent.
I didn't think I got to the main mole yet.
Does it give you it automatically in this form, or does it give you in?
No, no, it will give you in product. Yes, in product. Yes, factorized.
Factorized.
Yes. So I have to just do this bit by hand, but that's no big deal. Yeah, yeah.
But the strange thing is that all the alphas and betas are positive.
Yeah.
Real positive numbers, which is very bizarre.
But beta is only positive when you're approximating. In this notation, when you're approximating positive alpha, if you're approximating some function m to the alpha where alpha is negative, then these things become negative shifts, which reduces the condition.
Alpha equals minus one, I'm almost sure.
For alpha equals minus one, then you have the optimal approximation is just 1 over m.
Yes.
For alpha equals minus one, you've got m to the half.
Yeah, that one I'm...
What I'm saying is when alpha...
That's positive.
Yes, and yes, exactly.
Alpha equals minus one.
Sorry, what I'm saying is, when the magnitude of all of this thing here is bigger than one, that's what I'm trying to say. Sorry, I'm mixing my notations up here. When the magnitude of all this thing here is bigger than one, then the smallest shift here is actually negative, which reduces the condition number, increases the condition number of your matrix. It makes it harder to invert the thing.
I see. It doesn't like people
who can hold. Could divergence.
No. It doesn't like having a pole, but of course if you have an M inverse, you could just move the invert M as well.
No, it doesn't like neither a pole. This is sort of conformal invariant. Neither a pole here or one infinite.
Yeah. So it's only softer than that. For once, the softer case is exactly what you want.
Yeah. But the alphas are not positive necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is an issue of cancellation. Numerically.
No.
It doesn't.
No.
Well,
sorry,
when
those
you
alphas,
ask...
No, those alphas are all positive.
This alpha is different from this alpha.
Yeah.
No, the alpha i's and the beta i's.
Okay, these alpha... Well, it doesn't matter if these are positive or not. We're only really concerned with these here.
No, I was concerned about, you do this multi-shift.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then we see if it's cancellation.
Okay, no, they generally are all the same sign.
Yeah. So it's stable.
Yes.
Miraculous.
It's, empirically nice. So we have these incredibly high precision rational approximations. So since we can approximate our matrix square root, matrix 4 through so accurately, there's no need to include any noisy reweighting, any noisy accept reject. We can just use a conventional metropolis, which scales much nicer than the noisy algorithms. So that's great. We can just proceed with general hybrid Monte Carlo, because we have this R squared in the action instead of the matrix square root. We have this R squared in here because the roots are real non-degenerate. We need to easily be able to evaluate the heat bath. With the action written as R squared, the heat bath is just evaluating this rational function applied, the inverse of this rational function applied to a Gaussian noise vector. We also have the momentum refreshment at the beginning of the trajectory. And so once we've done a heat bath, we obviously do molecular dynamics, which I'll come to in a second. And then we finish off with the metropolis acceptance test, which is what we want to do.
I just wondered always, is there any possible game? Has anybody tried to change the kernel in the pi? It can be expensive because you would have to invert it for the use, but is there some game? I don't know, something which is more related to the gauge fields. I don't know.
Not sure.
No.
Obvious advantage. I mean, the obvious thing you can do is you can change the factor a half, but that just
No, I meant some structure, but the pi star sort of field But you can also transform that back into the form of the act, and you can modify the action of the gauge field.
Yeah, for given act, I don't know, big sum.
And then you want to do the full property.
Yeah, I don't know, something like the five, you think about, if you think about it as a five-dimensional evolution, the pi stars of the kind of, you know, it's a curved manifold, the U's live on a curved manifold, typically the pi, the kinetic energy has a metric, so, something more natural.
The pi's live in the algebra, so there actually was vector space. It's the U's.
Well, I'm thinking about an action which has a square root of g in alpha beta d, you know, d alpha.
That's right, but I mean, when you have a special mechanics on any such manifold, the pi is always in the tangent space.
On a curved space, it's natural to.
Well, for the curved space, if the fields you're updating with phi is in a curved space, the pi is still living in the tangent space, they're still living in a vector space.
Not necessarily. I mean, you can't do it.
Like, yeah.
But no, I'm not saying this is wrong.
No. You have to set up a form of a classical mechanics.
A particle that moves on a curved planet.
Yeah.
Okay. It will follow geodesics, and the action has. Also, the U dot power has a dependence on the curve.
The usual Hamiltonian formula is in the momentum still.
You can scale it out, but if you don't, it's sort of natural, it looks to me. Okay, I'm taking it where it shouldn't go, so sorry.
Okay, so we just have something which looks like standard HMC, but we have this rational function in place. Now, I introduced the square of the rational function in the action instead of just the rational function itself to allow me to easily evaluate the heat bath. Now, this is actually going to lead to double inversion when we take the derivative of this, which is, I don't want two CG inversions per MD step, it'll just double the cost of the algorithm. What we notice, though, is we had to do the acceptance test exactly. This had to be done with no bias to get the resultant distribution correct. The heat bath had to be evaluated exactly to this high precision rational approximation as well. But the molecular dynamics, that doesn't have to be done accurately. In fact, that can be anything really. Any errors you introduce are going to be corrected for stochastically by the acceptance test into the trajectory. So what instead I do is a different rational approximation, generally a lower degree approximation, which actually approximates m to the minus alpha instead of m to the minus alpha over 2, and use this lower degree approximation for the molecular dynamics. By using lower degree approximation, any errors I'm going to introduce by that are going to be corrected for stochastically. So there's no problem with doing that.
But what's the advantage of that? Just to save memory?
Save memory.
For what type? Why?
Hmm?
You don't have a
multi? Yes, I guess I've got a multi-mass solver, but this is just to say, it's maybe going to be a 20% difference in the overall cost of the algorithm, but yes, to save memory. When you're programming, it's not going to, if as long as it doesn't affect your acceptance rate, you're not bothered.
Sure.
But when you're programming specifically for the QCQC, you're trying to fit everything in the 4 megabytes of EDRAM. And so you want your molecular dynamics to be as high performance as possible.
Oh, yeah.
It also depends on how you calculate the force as well. If you have a large sum of terms to the force, then that might kill you. So we have a pseudo-fermionic force, which looks like a sum of terms like this, where n bar is the degree of the reduced rational approximation. And it just looks a sum of terms very much like HMC-like force terms. Now, the cost of this proposed algorithm with regards to conjugate gradient operations anyway is very similar to the R algorithm. We have an extra CG inversion from the heat bath and an extra inversion at the end of the trajectory for when you evaluate the energy. So, you know, this looks very good. Unfortunately, when we come to do more complicated fermion actions, it's not quite so simple. So, when we have 2 plus 1 Astad fermions, we're going to have an action that looks like this. We have a square root piece and a fourth root piece for the 2 and 1 flavor contributions, respectively. Now, we just think, okay, well, we'll replace these square root and fourth roots by rational approximations, square root and a fourth root rational approximation. Now we think we're doing well to begin with. When we have the staggered kernel, Astad kernel, I should say, the bounds of the operator are very explicitly known. The lower bound is just given by m squared for m dagger m. So we just think we can proceed nice and simply. Unfortunately, we have this problem with the force. Now we have this non-analytic force term, so we have to we end up with a sum. We have the sum of HMC-like force pieces. Now, if we were just to calculate the force naively, or naively is maybe the wrong word, if we use to calculate the force the same way that the force is calculated in the R algorithm, where the derivative of the fermion matrix is calculated always applied to the vector. So the force isn't, yes, so the derivative of the fermion matrix is always calculated when it's applied to the vectors, the solution vectors. So if this was done, this would lead to a very expensive algorithm because you have the sum of all these very expensive derivative pieces. But what you can instead notice is that the actual derivative of the Fermion matrix has no mass dependence, nor does it have any of the beta dependence, the shift dependence. So what you can do is you can actually calculate the derivative of the Fermion matrix with exactly as a matrix, and then apply it to as many vectors as you want, because the only shift dependence or mass dependence is in the solution vectors. Now, because we're calculating the force as a matrix, we're doing SU3 times SU3 instead of SU3 times vectors, so we end up with an instant threefold increase in the computation. But what you can do to get around this, as I've just said, there's no mass dependence in the derivative. So you can actually do the two-flavor case and one-flavor case using the same matrix you've just calculated, which gives you a factor of two back. And the R algorithm has this funny behavior. To get the delta T squared errors in the algorithm, the heat bath is evaluated at every step of the microdynamics for each of the fermion fields. So you have two fermion fields, so you've got to evaluate two extra Dirac operators per MD step at different points in the molecular dynamics step. Now, whenever you calculate the Dirac operator for ASTAD, this involves you having to re-smear the lattice to construct the operator again, which actually turns out to be a relatively expensive operation. With HMC, you only have to do this once at the midpoint of the MD step when you're doing the inversion, but for the R, you've got to do this two other points in the molecular dynamics time. So when you take into account this extra overhead from the heat bath and the fact we can do both masses simultaneously, the cost of the HMC algorithm and the R algorithm are actually almost identical. When you add up all the floating point operations, that is. Of course, this is going to be an implementation-dependent statement.
So the 5% is counting operations? Or
that's just counting. That's counting operations. Actually, the implementations are almost identical. They get all about 30% in QCQC, so it doesn't really matter. So just as an initial test for the algorithm, just taking this volume here, and these parameters here, the light pair and the strange quark mass. Now, milk of this rule when they do R algorithm simulations with 2 plus 1 ASTAD, that they pick the step size to be 2/3 of the lightest mass. So that would give me a step size of 0.005. So if I take that same step size and go with RHMC and see what acceptance rate I get, because obviously the acceptance rate is going to determine the cost of my algorithm. And I get an acceptance rate of about 70%, which is exactly where you'd think. Of course, this is exactly what you want, because you want an acceptance rate between 60 and 80% to be in the optimum efficiency range. But of course, this is going to be dependent on the autocorrelations of the algorithm. I haven't compared the correlation lengths yet. The costs might be better, it might be worse. But anyway, if just comparing acceptance rates, it looks very good. But we think we can actually do better than this. Well, I know we can do better than this, in fact. Now, Hassenbusch introduced this idea known as the Hassenbusch trick, where you, instead of writing this in terms of one pseudo-Fermion field, you introduce an extra dummy, more massive Fermion matrix and rewrite it in terms of multiple pseudo-fermions. This has been shown to improve the acceptance rate enough that you can increase the step size to gain back. To reduce the number of floating point operations per MD trajectory. Now this actually works because you're improving the stochastic estimator of the ferromagnetic force, which allows you to increase the step size. Now we can actually do the same sort of effect pretty much for free with RHMC. We're simulating this ferromagnetic determinant here. We can rewrite this as the nth power of determinant of m to alpha over n. So we can rewrite this in terms of n pseudo-Fermion fields, where each kernel which appears in here is now m to the minus alpha over n. So we expect this should reduce the noise of the ferromagnetic force, allow us to increase the step size sufficiently to improve the cost of the algorithm. So just for a quick test of this, I'll just show you a quick plots of from an 8 to the 4 lattice with the four flavors of staggered quarks with these parameters here. So what this plot here is showing is a plot of step size along the bottom and acceptance rate up the vertical here. Now, the red points here are just the results from HMC. The blue points here are from using RHMC and using two square root fields and three third root fields and four fourth root fields. And you can see that as you increase the number of pseudo-fermions to approximate your ferromagnetic determinant, the acceptance rate it goes up its constant step size. And of course, are you winning actually anything back here by doing these extra inversions per MD step? So what I've just defined here is a measure of the efficiency, which is just the acceptance rate divided by the total number of CG iterations per trajectory. And you can see here from these plots here that just the two square root fields seems to be the most efficient in terms of operations for a constant acceptance rate. In fact, the best blue point here is 60% more efficient than the red point here. So this multiple pseudo-fermion trip does work. So if I apply this to the case... 60. So let's apply this back to the ASTAD, large volume, light mass ASTAD run I did before. So before, I had about 70% using a square root field and a fourth root field. So what I've done now is I've said use this n roots acceleration and using three sixth root kernels and a fourth root kernel. And I can achieve massive increases in the step size. The step size can go up to 0.03, which is taking up to 78%. This corresponds to nearly a threefold improvement in the computational cost of the algorithm compared to the parameters which Milk could run at for their R algorithm runs. So the algorithm is exact and it's much faster. Of course, this is all subject to autocorrelation comparisons, but this is perhaps forthcoming.
In the previous part, you showed that any of the choosing for the optimal.
Yes.
That's not what you actually did then, right? You can say the three in the next
part? Okay, this was just... you're right. Because this is a small volume, light mass, it's heavy mass, just a quick back of the envelope thing, just to proof of concept. As you go to larger volumes, smaller masses, you expect that the number of fields you need to, the optimum number of fields increases.
I guess you made a remark on power correlations. I'm trying to think, without that, you really don't know what to compare, right? I mean, taking the same number,
yes,
the trajectory length in tau, whatever that means, when you're going through a different path in the phase space, you don't know what time means, right?
The real problem is how you compare the autocorrelation for exact algorithm versus an inexact algorithm.
Yeah, but even your exact different versions of exact.
But there have been studies.
Not clear what the speed is.
It's very unlikely the autocorrelation will depend on that.
There have been studies with the Hasenbusch.
Why should the autocorrelation depend on a very small extent?
Well, you're taking a given path from phase space.
The autocorrelations tend to just depend on the fact that you moved a long enough path that an essentially independent configuration, that will still be true.
Well, I know they're going to become independent, but the rate at which you move through phase space may depend on whether you have lots of pseudo-fermions or.
There's a study done on the Hasenbusch trick which showed the autocorrelations don't change. And this is almost exactly the same as the Hasenbusch trick, using multiple pseudo-fermion fields.
Basically, you're going to say that you go the same distance.
What does distance mean?
You're doing sufficiently different. It's a very slightly different approximation to the same trajectory.
It shouldn't matter. And empirically, it's shown not to.
And it's lowest order instrument. I mean, in principle, there could be higher order stuff.
Anyway, to answer your question, why I'm going, why am I using three fields here? Is a much bigger volume, smaller mass. I expect to need more fields to get a bit optimum improvement. Also, this is just my first pass at it. I've just literally just got these results the last couple of weeks. So there's lots of tuning to be done here. This is just a proof of concept. This works in large volumes, small masses. You can improve upon the R algorithm.
It's also got the nice advantage that the more ill-conditioned the system becomes, the more you win.
Okay, so this the RHMC algorithm works for Astad fermions. It seems to be.
Get the same answer for something physical?
Yes.
Exact combination of the wrong answer. The same wrong answer.
You want everything, don't you?
These are all, yeah, this algorithm's fermionic independent. Apply it to the fermion of your choice, I don't mind.
If you really have cross-check with one of something
you're not calculating. Yeah, you can compare plaquettes and something more physical. But, of course, I'll come to comparing with the R algorithm later on with the domain wall fermions, but, of course, you've got step size errors in the R algorithm, so there's going to be a small percent difference you would expect. Okay, so let's move on to domain wall fermions. So we have an action of a two-flavor piece and a one-flavor piece, where we take the square root now for the one-flavor piece. Now, the matrix I've defined here includes the polyvalars matrix. Unfortunately, when we write this as a rational approximation, we can't write the resultant rational form in terms of shifted matrices. The resultant partial fraction expansion does not appear as shifted matrices, which means you can't get the multi-mass solver. So you would have to evaluate every rational piece separately. So you don't want to do that because you'd end up with an expensive algorithm, obviously. So what you have to do is we have to split this matrix into the polyvalars and the strange quark, where each of these is just m diagram with the mass parameter of one and strange quark mass. So,
is it obvious that one needs to use the same fermions for strange and abnormal?
You would lose an entirety or something.
But in particular, in the case of the charm, do you want to do the charm work with the main well fermions or not? I don't know the answer.
But unfortunately, the heavy ones are so much cheaper than the light ones that you don't really care if it's the same.
But that's what I was asking about this thing.
Yeah, but it's still sufficiently cheap that it's not really going to make a big difference.
The caramel synergy seems to kind of work for strain, you know, case and stuff, and so why not? The charm you can really argue about, though.
So if we write, we split the one flavor contribution in terms of these two things here. So we actually have to do an explicit CG inversion for the bosonic piece and for the fermionic piece. But of course, these costs are going to be small. This thing's going to invert very quickly because it's so well-conditioned, and this thing's well-conditioned compared to that. So the additional cost of doing these is expected to be small compared to just two-flavor HMC. Now, there is a slight problem with domain wall fermions. I don't know what the exact lower bound is on the preconditioned M dagger M domain wall matrix. With the staggered case, it was just M squared. It's very simple. With this thing, it's more complicated anyway. So what I'm doing at the moment is just use a speculative lower bound, monitor that the lower bound on the operator does not go below this lower bound, and just proceed. Now, this wouldn't actually be a problem if it did jump over the lower bound. All that would happen is your acceptance rate would go to zero, and you wouldn't accept any wrong configurations. But you would notice that, obviously, looking back at your logs.
You have to have approximation covering the full range for the acceptance step and the heat bath. You didn't cover it for the
MB. Yes. Yeah, so you're checking that. But I'm saying if an eigenvalue crossed over during the MD, if you did an accept reject with the wrong approximation, then your acceptance rate would go to zero. So I've just done a check with an initial comparison between our algorithm and RHMC with these parameters here with domain multiply around 16 cubed by 32 by 8, with these mass parameters. I've got a degenerate 3 flavor run and a 2 plus 1 run with MS over 2 for the light pair. So I'm comparing against the R algorithm with a step size of 0.01 and RHMC, where I'm using 3 square root fields, 1 square root field for the strange quark and 2 square root fields for the light pair, using the same acceleration trick I described before. Okay, this is what I was saying about the lowest eigenvalue behavior. So this is the actual lowest eigenvalue of MDAGRM for these mass. Well, for the red is for the heavier mass I've got, and the black is for the lighter mass. So I'm using an approximation lower bound down here, and I can see that I'm quite well within a margin of safety there. So there should be no problems from that. This is just the upper bound of the approximation. I'm actually using an bound of the approximation up here. So the R algorithm and RHMC are consistent, as you would expect. With such a heavy mass parameter, you don't expect there to be too many step size errors. This is the value of MRes, which is being calculated separately, and they don't quite coincide, but you would expect that from this is just a linear extrapolation with just two data points. So you can't expect too much. Now this is an interesting plot. This is a plot of the pseudoscalar correlator, the 14th time slice, just comparing the RHMC and R algorithm. And you can see the R algorithm one has these occasional large spikes. This is true on all time slices. And we're thinking that this might be due to the step size errors from the R algorithm. In fact, these blue configurations might correspond to ones that would have been rejected by RHMC. So just in this very initial test, we're seeing potential signs of the inexactness of the R algorithm.
This is staggered?
No, this is domain wall. This is all domain wall. Here's just a plot comparing the residual masses and the M row and the resultant lattice spacing, just showing that these small cystics are consistent. Just with these small number of statistics, I'm just comparing the histograms of the two distributions just to show that the distributions are consistent. So I am simulating the same theory with RHMC. And I've got here the dynamical residual mass extrapolation, and again, they're consistent. So hopefully I've convinced you that RHMC is a fast, exact algorithm for these non-local quantum field theories, or maybe non-local is not the best description, depending on which audience I'm speaking to.
I mean, this is Michael
Sleff, so
I have to fill in for it.
Now, when I'm doing ASTAT fermions, although the naive cost of the R and RHMC algorithms are almost identical, I can get large gains over the R algorithm by using these Hassenbusch-like tricks, the end roots acceleration. Although, as I said, this is a very, very initial test of just with this large volume. I can potentially increase this factor significantly just with further tuning. The problem with the ASTAT code in QCDOC at the moment is it seems to be remarkably unstable. For some reason, the QCDOC crashes a lot when you run ASTAT code and not with domain wall code. You typically get about 20 minutes to 1 hour of running on an ASTAT where you can get weeks with domain wall for some reason.
You get years to go over.
So the two put will be the same.
And so I've also described the how the RHNTs apply to domain mall and
it's you don't have
well, you see the masses are so heavy then you don't and the volume is smaller, you don't really expect it to be such a big gain. Of course when you get to the smaller masses, you expect this is going to really kick in much more. So that's something that will be done in time goes on as a bigger QC2C is built. Because these are all these tests are just conducted in single 1,000 node rack QC2Cs. When they get a big QC2C and these small mass runs, then I expect that it will really come into play then. The noise in the R algorithm that appeared in the pseudoscalar correlator, it's going to be interesting to investigate whether these similar spikes appear in other measurables when we compare R and RHNC, and that's something that will be investigated in the future. And all the future work at least on the UK QCD machines, is going to be done using RHMC with both the ASTAD and the domain wall fermions. Okay, that's that.
Thank you very much.